Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, why didn't this happen? This sounds amazing.
Hey, I'm ready. All right, foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a millionish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, as the other Cultaholic lads are busy trying to find ways to pass the time in quarantine as we all experience our very own TNA pay-per-view name. We are here via our Ica Pro Power DeLorean, back in a time where we kind of wish we had some sort of terrible virus to stop us going to wrestling, because we could do with not watching stuff from this era sometimes. It gets a bit shonky. This week, a slight exception. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell. I'm with the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic. If you were to hand him a pencil, he would immediately push you away because, one, social distancing, and two, you're not wearing gloves, and three, he don't need it, he needs a pen. He gets it right every time. That's why he is Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
It's a very impressive turning point. Genesis, which one are you talking about?
Your very own Victory Road, my friend.
Okay. I wasn't sure where you were going there. Is it Unbreakable and I'm in a wheelchair like Sam Jackson?
Well, no, what's going to happen is you're going to have a fight with Sting and just get really, really messed up before the match starts.
There's plenty of upside there. You know, I'll keep my job. You know, I'll still be a main eventer. They'll put the belt on me again eventually. It'll all work itself out.
You're going to be fine, honey. You're going to be fine. And it's not just me and Justin Henry from Off of America this week. We have a third wheel on our tricycle. And I'm really, really excited to bring this guy to the podcast, because many years ago, when I was long before the Cultaholic dream, any other dream happened, I was working. This is a little true story. I was working working with my dad, and I was working in a warehouse, and I had podcasts to keep me sane. And there was one podcast that I fell in love with, and I listened every week, and it was RBR, Weekly Wrestling Talk. And I loved it so much that I would interact with the show, and to the grace of all that was good, the host of the show even allowed me on a couple of occasions just to voice stuff. And it was the first time that I actually kind of felt like I had a wrestling community that I belonged to. And it's been so many years since we actually spoke. And I reached out the other month and said, hey, we're doing this thing. Come and say hi. And he joins me today, the host of RBR Wrestling, William R. Washington. William R. Washington, how you doing, old friend?
Tom Campbell, man, I am so excited to do this with you. I have a couple of true stories I want to tell really quick.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, so obviously, as he mentioned, I've been doing RBR Weekly Wrestling Talk a really long time. This is its 15th year. I started interacting with Tom right around, like, somewhere in the first year, I want to say. And because I remember I did the WrestleMania 23 special with you, and so that would have been about, like, 2 years in. But funny thing was, we used to have this segment on RBR called The Lightning Round. And when we first started doing it, my former co-host, Michael Z, used to write these bits for us. And it was kind of like Weekend Update for pro wrestling headlines, kind of like what Cultaholic does now. And So this is just a testament to how good Tom has always been with his wit. Once Michael Z left the show, I was like, well, you know, we're not, like, good at this kind of stuff. So, like, Tom, could you, like, write the lightning round for us? And he did every week. And we fumbled through it every week because, like, if you listen to, like, his intro there, for example, like, Tom's always just been good at – he's just always had this great orating skill. And, like, no matter what it is, he could just do it and do it quickly.
Stop it!
It's insane about his speed, right? But he would write those same type of bits for us, and we would just fumble over them every single week. And then, of course, there was, like, the breakdown between American references. Like, there was one time where – I forgot what the headline was, but the punchline was going to be that, like, Stacey Keibler isn't smart. Or no, it wasn't Stacey Keibler. It was Maria Kanellis. And he messages me, and he's like, hey, what do you call liquid paper in the U.S.? And I was like, whiteout. And he's like, okay, that makes sense. And the punchline was going to be that she put whiteout on her screen. It was little things like that. But it was fun back then. It's just good times. I miss it a lot.
Aw, I forgot I did the lightning round.
Yeah, it was like 13 years ago.
Wow, unlucky 13. Well, look at this.
How you doing there, William?
I'm doing great. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing well. What part of the states are you from?
I am in Colorado, where we are currently under stay-at-home orders. So I have literally nothing else to do right now but watch old wrestling and talk about it.
Well, that's what I do even when there's not a stay-at-home order.
That's just how we roll, isn't it, mate?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. It's not passes the time. Colorado ain't doing too bad according to these numbers I'm looking at right now. I'm in New Jersey, so we have a New York above us, which is that's kind of a teeming mass toxic right now.
It's real bad. Like, we're doing okay here. I think we're of the area, we're probably the worst in Colorado, but I will say that relatively to some of the other major states, we're doing okay.
I'm in extreme South Jersey, so I'm nowhere near the epicenter. Well, I'm like 3 hours away from it. Yeah, New York City's kind of a hellhole at the moment.
What do you mean at the moment? Hey, just jumping in with a little joke there. Justin, we turn to you. Where and when are we for Monday Night Raw this week?
Well, it's our first live Raw in about 6 weeks. Monday, August 1st, 1994, we are live from the Beakley Center in Youngstown, Ohio. I think the history of WWE.com may have gotten something wrong here. It says there's 8,000 fans here. There's no effing way that is true. I would say the Observer's estimate of about 2,300 is much more apt. I don't know where they got 8,000 from, but, I mean, mistakes are made.
Is it the same place that Tony Khan said that you could put 50,000 people in Craven Cottage for Fulham? He talked to the Bucks on the podcast this weekend, because the Khans own Fulham FC, the soccer team. I said soccer because America, friends. And he took the Young Bucks to Craven Cottage, which is the ground for Fulham FC. And he said, we can get 50,000 wrestling fans in here. And it's like, Khan, mate, you can barely get 25,000. What are you doing? And the annoying thing is, I put that out in the news today, and all I've had is messages from people saying, you can't get 50,000 people in Craven Cottage. I said, I know, Khan said it. Take it out on me. Furious.
I'm just nodding because I have no idea what building you're talking about.
It's the Jets.
It's where Fulham plays, right?
Okay, I guess Fulham's a team or something?
Yeah, Fulham is just outside of London. So Fulham FC is the football club that the Khans own, which is why if any wrestling company is going to do a Wembley Stadium SummerSlam-type shenanigan, it's probably going to be AEW.
Do they have a rival called Empdium?
Way! They do now.
Okay.
We're going to pretend they do. Justin, take us back to 1994. How old would you have been in 94?
At this point of the show, I would have been 10 years old, and I would turn 11 later in the year.
And you were a fully fledged wrestling fan at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I've been a fan for about 5 years at this point.
Okay. What can you remember from being 10?
Oh, wow. Let's see.
I feel like we always talk about wrestling. We never talk about you.
Well, at this point in time, if I recall correctly, I had this unhealthy obsession with spending my allowance money on Nintendo games that I bought at the flea market, old games that no one ever wanted for like $2. So I'm running home to play like Urban Champion and Blades of Steel Hockey, and just Blades of Steel is actually a good game. But I was a pretty typical kid, just, you know, suburban New Jersey, hanging out with my friends, playing sports outside, and of course, watching a healthy amount of wrestling.
Well, yourself.
I was 7 years old, and I was actually on the road at this point. I was really thinking about, like, was this the point where we left California? Because I was born in California, and then we moved to Colorado in 1994. And I remember we took this big road trip, and it was right at the beginning of August. It was, like, late July, early August, because I remember it was, like, this incredibly sweaty car ride that we ended up taking. Now, what I was into at this point in time was Power Rangers. And I remember that vividly because of the fact that, one, I'm still in the Power Rangers. But, two, when my – in the state of California at that point, like, that was, like, a year in a Power Rangers run, those toys were impossible to find. You could not find them in the entire Southern California area. However, as we started taking our road trip and we made it into, like, the cities in Nevada no one ever talks about, they had Power Rangers toys everywhere. And so, like, I remember coming out of that road trip right around early August of 94 with, like, all of these Power Rangers toys. I had Tommy. I had the Megazord. I had the Dragon Dagger. I had everything. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing ever. I don't even care that I left my home behind. I was a wrestling fan at the time. However, we were a WCW family. And so, like, I watched WWF. Quite a bit, just because they weren't on opposing – I mean, they weren't on the same night. But I was more into the things happening on WCW Saturday night. And I was more – like, Sting was my favorite wrestler. So it's always fun to get to go back and revisit stuff like this just because of the fact that it wasn't my primary viewing.
Well, it's funny that you mention WCW, you being a WCW fan, because as in terms of this particular week in history, according to the Observer, a new round of tapings of Worldwide are about to take place at Disney MGM. Hulk Hogan will be the focal point of the tapings, of course. Hogan's quest to find out who attacked him at Clash of the Champions is going to take the center stage. Question for you both, to Justin, to you, Will. Who was meant to attack Hulk Hogan?
I believe it was Mr. Perfect.
Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. Will, any advance on that?
Nope, nothing. I don't know.
It was indeed Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig.
Right.
It was meant to be Hennig joining WCW, but that never happened. That never came to pass. But it's all right. We got the Butcher.
I'll say it was kind of a problem there because Kurt Hennig still had a contract with WWF at the time. And it would have been inadvisable to have him be the one to pull the Tonya Harding on Hogan's Nancy Kerrigan, smashing his knee with the lead pipe.
Although it is amazing. Like, contracts are so much different now than they were then, where, like, back then both companies were, like, willing to write storylines around guys that they were anticipating getting, because, like, we didn't really have, like, big contract tampering rules the way we do now, where, like, you can't even have a conversation with anybody until, like, we know that their contract is up.
Well, nowadays you have, you know, Brody Lee and AEW on December 9th. All right, he's going to be the exalted one. He'll be here in about 90 days. Might as well just start writing it now.
Yeah. Whatever.
I'm sorry, the exalted Vince, based on the recent vignette with him and John Silver and Alex Reynolds.
What did we think of that team?
I thought it was tremendous. I mean, it was clearly I don't know if it's like just a one shot thing where they're making fun of Vince the one time, or if the whole idea is that the Dark Order is a cult, and with a Vince like leader, that WWE, the parody of WWE being a cult mentality where they just do what Vince tells them to do. And they're all afraid to question Vince. If that's just like, you know, one giant satire of WWE in general.
I kind of like the latter, to be honest. I like the idea of, like, especially if it's just kind of, if it goes off in more of a cheeky way, like where it never actually directly name drops Vince, but just almost drops like little stories we've heard, like the sneezing thing, like the eating the steak first kind of stuff. But the idea of, I almost feel like it could almost go too comedic, but the idea of Brody Lee being almost like an incompetent leader, but everybody's still like following everything he does and nobody like questioning, because I have a feeling the next place they would literally go is, I don't know, like Alex Reynolds gets hurt and he's like, oh my God, I need to go to a hospital. And Brody Lee is like, a what? And he's like, a hospital. I need to go to a hospital. He's like, a local medical facility.
Hey, my exalted one, my pants keep sagging. Here, put on this title. That'll hold it up. I mean, a belt title.
I'm nervous that he might just start doing the Vince walk, though. And it's just, then it just becomes a complete parody.
Yeah, don't go that far. But if you think, at least just like do little references, I think that'd be funny.
Imagine the peacock strut with the Brody Lee eyes.
I can't, because then I won't sleep again.
I want a wind-up toy that does that.
big moments, according to The Observer, to happen this month. In this particular year in ECW, as an NWA title tournament will take place in Philadelphia on the 27th Ooh. Of August. I'm sure that'll all go fine and nothing bad will happen.
It'll go off without a hitch, trust me.
Yeah, it'll be fine. They'll show all the respect for the National Wrestling Alliance. It'll be brilliant. One more nothing little... Oh, go on, my friend.
I was just going to say nothing the least bit controversial is going to happen. It'll be all hunky-dory.
One more little tidbit before we get into the show. WWF had a show cancelled on the 31st of July in Jonestown, Pennsylvania at the very last minute. Was it because A, they forgot to book the venue, B, they sent the ring on the wrong day, or C, the venue closed for refurbishment but didn't tell them?
I already saw the answer, so I'll let William answer this one.
Oh, man, that could be anything. B? Yes.
Okay, Justin, what do you reckon? A, forgot to book the venue. B, sent the ring on the wrong day. C, the venue closed without telling them.
Like I said, I already saw the interest, so it would be unfair.
Fair enough. Justin isn't going to answer. Will, you absolutely on the money. They sent the ring on the wrong day.
Nice!
It was cancelled at the last minute with the wrestlers in the building because the ring was accidentally sent to Youngstown a day early, which, according to Dave Meltzer, sounds like something that would happen in WCW. And it probably was.
Let me tell you something. If TNA did that in the last 15 years, that'd be like a top story on every website.
Oh, of course it would. Of course it. We love it when TNA does something a bit silly. It's brilliant news.
Of course we do.
So that's the Observer from this time. We now head over to Justin Henry, who will talk us through this particular episode of Monday Night Raw. Quite an interesting one, this one.
Yes, Justin Henry, Thierry's brother. See, I know something about the footballers.
Thanks for calling it footballers.
Yes, I'm trying to be...
That's what they're called.
Reaching across the pond here.
Thanks, mate.
We open with a little history package of Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels.
And I got excited seeing this, by the way.
Yes, we picked a good show for you to show up on.
I said this at the end of last week. This feels like we've got a guest coming round, so we've tidied up. Like, Raw has just been so wobbly for the last few weeks. Like, oh, Will's coming. Put Shawn and Razor on. Bull Nakano and Alundra Blaze, put them on.
Yes, we have highlights of the WrestleMania 10 ladder match, which they put over as being one of the biggest matches of all time, one of the best matches of all time. And then we come to the antiquated but somewhat comfortably dated to the camera promos. We start with Razor, and of course he promises to win, but then he looks off camera to where Shawn would presumably be, and then Shawn's promo fades in. So we get like this little brief moment of Razor looking at Shawn while Shawn's still kind of faded and Razor's fading out. Kind of cheesy.
Feels like a love song music video.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It looked like an old, like, almost, I don't know, babyface type music video, and I don't mean babyface as in wrestler, but babyface as in like the R&B artist, and just the way that they were kind of looking off towards each other, and like the fade in especially, because like as it ends, Razor looks over, and then Shawn fades in, and Shawn's like looking over at where Razor would be, and it almost looks like a love connection that was just that just couldn't quite make it.
Wind beneath my click.
John, an album art, Wind Beneath My Click. I haven't explained this to you, Will. Hang on, let me explain this bit. So we have an extra member of the team. His name is John Eiley. And he is our Photoshop guru, and he listens to the podcast. So what we do is, if there's anything that we visualize in our mind's eye that we'd like brought to life, we just shout John, and we describe it, and John will bring it to life. So if there's anything that you visualize that you'd like to see in real life, just shout John with some instructions, and I guarantee you, on Saturday night, they will be on your Twitter timeline.
Nice. All right, John, I'm excited to see this.
John is basically the stenographer for our progressive dementia.
he really is. He's a hero.
Well, yes, kind of like in the "Wind Beneath My Wings" song, "Wind Beneath My Click." Did you ever know, Chico, that you're my? Actually, Evie, did you ever know that you're my Chico? So I'm like, you're never ever going over me.
That's beautiful, mate.
I like when Sean's promo where he says, "I make all my dates."
Yeah, like, sure. I know, you do for now.
I know heels lie, but come on. That's a good one.
Hey, that wouldn't happen for a couple more years. We're okay.
I'm having a Paul Heyman promo. I make sure everybody gets paid. We hit the intro. We go to ringside. We got Savage and Vince. Savage bellows, "Welcome back, Vince McMahon," because this is indeed Vince's return from summer camp.
Summer camp!
Vince was a Camp Granada for a few weeks.
This is the first time we have seen Vince since the trial. And I don't know whether they were very subtle about it, guys. I don't know whether you know. They were very subtle about them being a trial.
Yeah. Very subtle about just name-dropping Jerry McDevitt. On TV.
And let me tell you something. For the past however many months on this show, Tom and I have advocated for Randy Savage. We felt terrible for this man. That he doesn't get to wrestle anymore. That he's stuck on commentary doing something that he doesn't want to do. That he wants to be in the ring contributing, and that he still can contribute at age 41. Still a highly capable main event star, a beloved star. We saw him actually have a Yokozuna earlier this year. He could still go. At this point, I don't want him to ever get anything he wants ever again.
Is this the end for Savage for you?
I hope Hogan gets his Slim Jim endorsement. That's where I'm at with Savage at this point.
It is so funny to see, and we've talked about it a few times on the podcast, how Vince has said, like, "Oh, Savage, you're too old. You're too old to wrestle. But can you commentate this match featuring Nikolai Volkov?"
Yes, Nikolai Volkov versus, I don't know, Tony Parisi from 1971.
That happened.
Just whoever. He was a former tag team champion with Tony Garea. Yeah, it's my other theory about this is that maybe Vince wanted the gloat, but he knew he shouldn't do it. So he just had Savage do it on his behalf.
That's probably what it was, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's like, "Oh, yeah, Randy, you should probably stop bringing that stuff up. Like, you're not guilty. You beat the Justice Department. Come on, Randy, I'm way too humble for that." And, yeah.
Well, I have a question about that, but I suppose it won't come up till later. Okay. Because I just did some math here. But because we're talking about Savage's age. But wasn't Backlund like 45?
Yes. In fact, Lawler was older than Savage. Nikolai's older than Savage. Roddy Piper was comparably age of Savage, and he main evented the King of the Ring. It's not good. I mean, it does make no sense. It's just one of those things that's like the whole Chewbacca defense. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. So, but hey, who cares about all this annoying stuff involving Savage putting over retrieving Vince beating a very flimsy prosecution case in court? We have Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon on this show, gentlemen.
We do.
Ooh, yes, please.
And my goodness. Shawn Michaels has not wrestled a televised match in 5 months since WrestleMania 10. This man has not missed a beat. You couldn't even tell that Shawn had been out of action for this whole time.
I thought he looked great. I mean, now this match was, I feel, the bulk of tonight's episode of Raw.
It goes to like three commercial breaks. It definitely was.
It's massive. It really is. And what were your thoughts on it, Justin, first of all?
Well, first off, based on what William just said, it may have been too massive based on how the rest of the show ended up going.
Oh, God. I can't wait till we get to the end of the show.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Remember
the story of Savage complaining to Razor and Shawn at WrestleMania 10 that they went too long and got the 10-man tag screwed over? Shawn and Razor screwed up Smoking Guns twice. The Smoking Guns are the Lindsey Buckingham to... That one Kenan Thompson sketch on SNL where he never gets to talk. I can't remember what the hell is that called. Anyway,
so this match went just by the clock on WWE Network 18 minutes, and so you have to consider that with I think at the time commercial breaks were 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So consider that three times throughout. So we are really looking at close to about a 25-minute match. On TV and on an hour-long show, that is quite a bit. Now, if WWF was like structured more to like do this type of thing, where hey, you just have this one match and then maybe a couple of segments surrounding it, but they still intended on doing everything else they did, and so this did take up a lot of time.
It did, but I mean, a few weeks ago they had a Bret Hart 1-2-3 Kid match that went about 25, but that show was structured a little bit better, and I'm thinking maybe just maybe this wasn't meant to go 23. I think this one was. Maybe it's meant to go a few minutes shorter, but Sean's kind of had a somewhat history of going over his time because he knows he can get away with it because he has the ability to back it up. So I'm thinking this was a click audible.
I do have a question about this match.
Okay.
Did it need Razor Ramon doing a 3-hour bear hug?
Oh, no, not at all.
It did not. It was kind of weird.
It got some good heat at first, but yeah, then...
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, I felt like it got some good heat at first, but then it just felt like it went on forever. And then that's where I get what you were saying there, where like, are the Click just having fun out there? And I guess it's like hindsight, like knowing what we know now, then it suddenly feels like really tough to watch as it just goes on and on and on.
I mean, it does pick up again as it moves on later on in the match. But I mean, there are parts in the middle of Razor, you know, he does work the bear hug. It feels like Razor's a heel in the match for a while, and that Sean's like this the empathetic baby face that you want to pull for to get out of this his painful clutches and fight back. And it was kind of oddly structured. But it was still a really good match, though.
I think compared to some of the stuff that we have had on Raw over the last few weeks, like I was very excited to see this on the docket. And even with a big bear hug in the middle, and as you say, just the feeling that Razor was the bad guy for a bit of this, it was still great fun.
We had a weird moment early on where Savage. Savage puts it over the main 10 match again, calling it one of the best ever. And Vince seems skittish about agreeing with him. He goes like, "Yeah, with many more to come." Like he's kind of like we can't say that a 230-pound wrestler wasn't one of the best matches ever. People won't believe that. We need the big guys.
Is that what it is? You think?
I can't imagine why he wouldn't put that ladder match over more strongly. That was a tremendous match. It was a paradigm shifting match. Like, every spot fest today has some DNA from that match.
When do we get the second ladder match?
SummerSlam 95.
Oh, I've got a year yet. Now, that one I'm intrigued by. Because, Will, you know that the caveat to this particular ladder match, the next one that they have?
I've only ever seen the match. I don't remember what the stip was.
Well, it's still a ladder match, but this is coming at a time when they're trying not to be a violent product. And there's so many more limitations. That's right. Have I got that right, Justin? There was loads of limitations on what they could do with the ladder in that match.
Yeah, they couldn't use it as a weapon.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, I'm thinking about the match as it goes on, but I didn't remember anything surrounding the product at that time. One thing I am remembering, though, as far as this particular episode is concerned, is... I'm finding myself recalling as everything's going on throughout this. I'm like, oh, this is like the time period WrestleMania the arcade game is based off of. And keep in mind, I used to play that game to death, despite mentioning that I was a WCW guy. WrestleMania the arcade game, I think I owned it on like every console it could possibly be owned on. So as I'm like watching the intro and as they later on do the SummerSlam breakdown, I'm thinking, wow, this is that time period. This is everything that game is based off of. And then I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, the game came out in, what, it was early 95. So that would totally make sense that everything was being developed right around mid-94.
Yeah, we still had my jam coming out that was Raw for Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo.
Uh-huh.
That was when we could beat up the referee, and he would leave the ring eventually. That I've told Tom about many times.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this. So would the match just go on until you quit?
Well, it turned into a brawl mode. It just ended when someone ran out of energy at that point.
I love that. I want that to happen more in wrestling games now.
Hell, real life.
Or in real life.
Head 10 times. He just waves his arms to say F it and just walks out.
That's it. I want that, please. That'd be great.
That should be the rule of matches, where like if a ref gets knocked out, it suddenly becomes a last man standing match. And at that point, you just that would be amazing. And then suddenly, like everybody just like lights change, and like this match is now a last man standing match. Like, oh, you see that the referee's out? They just have to wrestle till one dies.
Or they make an announcement, Mr. Kyoto, you're double parked. He leaves the ring, and all of a sudden now it's the last man standing match until he comes back.
Is it last man standing for good, or just till he's moved his car and he got back in the ring?
Yeah. All right, folks, it's a regular match again.
Ah, damn.
John?
Someone's there holding a sledgehammer. Ah, dang it.
John, I want Mike Kyoto frantically trying to park his car.
We keep John busy here.
Thanks, John. Love you, John.
So this match begins, and Sean is just flying all over the place. He's just a human pinball at this point. Typical Sean. And it's soundtracked by Savage making constant legal references, but I'm trying to ignore that because we have Sean on the roll again. That's all I want at this point, just to help save the show. We get this awesome spot where Sean tries to dropkick Razor. Razor catches his feet, slingshots him over the ropes, and he plunges right on the diesel, and they both get taken out. That was awesome.
So good. Just lots of little bits in this match that just woke the crowd up. You know, as a few bits it slowed down in, but stuff like that, really loved it. Really loved it. No one else does it like these two.
This has been like a match of the year candidate if it had been like 15 minutes.
Yeah, if it had been a bit shorter, we'd have been all right.
They tightened the middle up. It had been an all-time Raw classic. As it was just a really, really, really great match. Diesel keeps getting involved, of course, because he's facing Razor at SummerSlam. Then Savage, this is actually funnier in hindsight because I wrote this down verbatim. And knowing how Raw turned out, I thought this was hilarious. Savage says on commentary, I figured it out, Vince. Sean and Diesel just do what they want to do.
That is a click reference on comms. Amazing.
As Scott Keefe would say, I love shoot comments. They aren't supposed to be shoot comments. So Sean tries to wear Razor down, gets this great wraparound sleeper where he just coils around him like a snake. Big sequence of near falls, lots of close two counts. Savage says he's tired and is going to lay down. Well, that's why Vince isn't using him, because he's old and very lethargic.
That was a weird line where he went, I'm just going to have a lie down. Yeah, all right, mate, you carry on.
Sean tries for the Razor's Edge. Vince is aghast that Sean would try to beat somebody with their own finisher. But and wait 3 years.
I like that. So it's a bit slow on that one, mate. I got that.
Well, when it becomes a necessity to the company.
You mentioned, by the way, that this is the first week with Vince being back on commentary in a while. Yes. And I have to say, that I know, like, there's a big generation of people who grew up on the WWF product, especially around this time period, who can live with Vince on commentary. I'm not one of those people, because he's so bad at it. And It's almost weird to think about all of the things he hates about commentary, because, like, he almost has all of those problems. But then on top of that, you know, it was one of those things where you know that Vince was, like, creatively in control of the product, because he's almost describing it in a way that only somebody who put all of this together would. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. I can't stand Vince on commentary, especially around this time period. I think he got a little bit better toward the end, and had some better, I mean, some of those better calls in, like, 96, 97. But, God, the way he calls matches is excruciating. And especially, like, I just found my – I just watched recently Wrestle War 92, mm-hmm. just because I wanted to see
– great show.
Yeah, great show. And, you know, Tony Khan talked about the fact that it's his favorite match, and that's what he's basing Blood and Guts off of. So I was like, I kind of want to watch that again because it's been a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just feeling the way commentary, like, flowed, and the way that people are coming at it from a sense of, like, in-ring expertise, whereas Vince kind of always wanted his product to have, like, a sense of camaraderie and things along those lines. And, like, the one who's doing the play-by-play is the one who has, like, almost – I guess the one who's calling the action in the ring has, at this point, no ring experience. And mm-hmm. it just sucks. It's not very good at all, and I can't stand Vince – on commentary around this time period, and it takes me out a lot.
Well, Vince was more of a pitch man more than anything else. His whole goal was just to kind of, you know, enhance the action of what he wanted to get over, and you know, whatever he screams for, whatever that sort of thing. But one thing you learn, especially with Savage on commentary with him, Vince has no improv skills at all. he really has none. Savage, he throws something quirky out there, and Vince has no idea how to, like, turn it into something. Either he just he just like, yeah, something of that sort, and he tries to get back on track. Like, Vince doesn't know, like, well, part of it's Savage, because he's not that great of an announcer. When Vince was with Ventura all those years ago, they were a great team. Especially on Saturday Night's Main Event, they were a fantastic commentary team. Like, Vince wasn't great, but they knew how to play off of one another. The problem here, for the most part, is kind of Savage. I think more than anything else, but that's just my opinion. And
I think just ultimately the commentary is just not any good. But I think Vince and Jesse had a dynamic that I think Vince thought he could replicate with Savage. And I think we were still at that point where, like, we weren't quite at full on diminishing returns. And
yes.
So I just think we weren't quite there yet.
Yeah, but just wait till 95 when Vince sinks to new depths in terms of screaming over everything. And it's Vince will keep degenerating. He'll much like today when in terms of being a creative mind.
Oh, gosh. He'll only get worse on comms. There's some bits he does later on tonight that really get my hackles up. And normally it's whenever the commentators talk over the ring announcers. That really annoys me. That's my one pet peeve, among others, when Fink's there announcing the guy, and then you got Vince going, "Oh, here it comes, what a guy this is!" It's like, just let Howard announce him, and then do your spiel. Shush for a bit.
We go to the finish in this match where it's a very creative finish, actually. Diesel gets involved. Referee gets tied up with him. Sean tries to use the Intercontinental title of Diesel. Ends up missing. Sean collides with Diesel. There's a little malfunction at the junction, as old JR would say. And then it ends up being that Razor gets thrown into Diesel's boot while he's still on the apron. He somehow has his leg over the top rope for reasons. Razor gets blasted right in the chin, falls back. Sean kind of cradles him. 1, 2, 3, gets the pin. Sean with a tainted win over Razor Ramon. And then it was an excellent match.
We get a big old beatdown. All the refs try and stop him, and Sean and Diesel put a beating on Razor.
Yeah,
I have to say, by the way, and this has just been one of my pet peeves all over the years, but I always hate the tight spot when someone's, like, not resisting. So, like, seeing Sean grab the tights of Razor as he rolls him up, but, like, Razor's, like, out anyway. I don't know. It's always a weird visual to me because I feel like Razor was, like, in a perfect position to just kick out anyway. So, I don't know. I don't feel like that spot works unless you're, like, truly set up for it or, like, really got somebody's legs, like, over their head as you're holding the tights.
I get that, but my theory is it's just Sean's such a heel that it's just instinctual to grab the tights no matter what.
Well, that's it. I kind of feel like it's just heel shenanigans. It's heel shenanigans. Him going, like, I may have knocked him out, but I'll just be sure, and I'll just pull on the material to make sure for definite he stays down.
He feels so naked without it.
Yeah.
It was like the O2 Rumble when Jericho beat Rock, where he hit Rock's head on the exposed buckle, then rolled him up with the tights and put his feet on the ropes and then he achieved three times on one sequence to make sure that he wasn't going to lose that match. And as always, overcompensate with everything. You can't undercompensate.
You can, because then you see what Todd Pettingill's wearing.
Well, after Diesel holds off all the referees in this bizarre version of Gulliver's Travels, we have this. we have the SummerSlam report. I love the SummerSlam report because I love hearing the song.
Brought to you by Domino's.
No, Will. Delivered by Domino's.
Domino's
delivers SummerSlam. Justin really loves that verbiage, you see.
Domino's delivers SummerSlam and they're not getting a tip.
I have to say, by the way, that pizza looked great, and maybe it's because, like, I haven't had pizza delivered in a while, because, I don't know, I'm just, like, afraid to order anything, but, man, that looked amazing.
Do your pizza guys not take precaution now? Because we ordered pizza the other night here, and obviously it's now no contact and all this stuff, you know, virus everywhere, and the pizza guy turned up. This is completely true. Pizza guy turned up. And he opened the door to the foyer of where we are. He put the pizza on the ground and took four massive steps back. It was like a bomb defusal. And and then once he was stood back, he said, "That's yours. Do you need a hand getting it upstairs?" I was like, "No, I've got this. It's fine." It just threw me how far away you walked. Is it going to go off in my face? And he had no humor about it. It was so weird. But you might find if you order pizza, you might have to act out a hostage negotiation with the pizza delivery guy to get it.
They put the money on the ground and take five steps back. I want to see the pizza down first.
As someone who delivered pizza, I've had my share of strange deliveries, but nothing quite like the era we're living in today.
What's the strangest delivery you ever had, Justin?
I had a guy who insisted on checking every item because he got screwed over one time on a delivery many years ago.
Did he eat it in front of you to make sure?
No, actually, it was my restaurant that screwed him over before I even worked there, because one of the person who delivered it was the brother of the guy who owned the place, and he thought he was told a different price over the phone, so there was an argument. So the owner's brother started eating that pizza right in front of him just to piss him off.
I love the pettiness. I like the pizza place.
So Toad Pettingzoo's wardrobe this week is what I would classify as pseudo-mid-90s hip. It is not the worst thing he's ever worn. It looks like he's hosting a talk show on syndication.
I thought he was dressed like a vicar. The first time I saw him, like, I was kind of half paying attention. I looked up, and he had his button done up at the top. I thought, why is he dressed like a vicar? And then I realized, oh, it's the 90s. Okay.
It's like something Ricky Lake would wear.
Honestly, in these days of being stuck inside, I could use Ricky Lake so bad right now. And Jenny
Jones. Go Ricky. Wow.
We are missing some Ricky Lake. She's still with us, isn't she? I feel really bad now.
Yeah.
She's still with us. Okay. She's just not on she's just not on television.
Yes. Yeah, she like rebooted the show like in 2011, I want to say. And it like bombed. And then that was it.
Yeah, she made a comeback. Arsenio made a comeback briefly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it was 2013 that she did it. Yeah, I don't know. I was, like, way in on that Arsenio comeback, and I was really disappointed that didn't sustain.
Yeah, Arsenio was kind of a touchdown back in the day.
Yep.
I miss Arsenio.
He, by the way, was great for this era. Like, the way Arsenio used to have, like, especially like around 92, like I go back just when I'm bored sometimes and watch like his interview with Big Boss Man, because he would, like, Arsenio would have wrestlers on like any talk show does, but they would always be a character, and that's what was so great about Arsenio as a talk show was that he would bring on guys to like put over their feuds, and put over whatever was going on in WWF at that point. And it was so good. And I used to always look forward to when a wrestler was announced on Arsenio.
There's like a Mount Rushmore of four great WWF moments in Arsenio. Hogan's messed up interview, where he basically tanked his own career. Warrior destroying furniture because he was a stinging character. And Arsenio had no idea what the hell to do. The interview with Bad News Brown. And the interview with Rick Rude.
Yes.
That was, of course, the Hogan one is probably the most infamous.
But there's so much more than that. And that's what I love about it. There's that literally, you just look up Arsenio and any major wrestler around that point, and you'll have some fun.
Do you ever have Slick on the show?
I think so.
I gotta find this now. I've got time.
We've all got time now. It's the one quantity that we have an abundance of.
Yeah, it's a lot of time.
Right, because he had Slick, Hakim, and Bossman. That was the one I was talking about. He had so Hakim was of course doing the African Dream gimmick, and Arsenio, and he's like talking to Arsenio like a fellow black man, and that one's my favorite. That's my absolute favorite, because like Arsenio is not no selling it. He is absolutely selling this as like, hey, this giant white guy is definitely my brother, and it's so good.
You won't get that interview on Carson.
Nope. Not going to get that interview at all.
So SummerSlam 94 has no such fun, unfortunately. Well, it has a couple promising matches. We find out that Luger will face Tatanka finally.
See, that's fun. That's going to be fun. The two most popular stars in wrestling today, according to Todd.
Todd would never lie to us, does he?
Exactly. In Todd we trust.
I got to say, for this whole bit, Todd did not annoy me except for one part. He made some sort of joke about Meteor slamming into Jupiter and goes, and then jumps ahead to the next thing.
I had to look that up, by the way, because I was like, did a meteor actually – because that feels like a timed reference. So I had to go look it up, and apparently there was like a meteor crash in 94 where Jupiter was, according to this, bruised by the comet's impact. And I'm like, okay, that felt like – because he wouldn't just say that. I'm like, that doesn't feel like something that anybody with any sense of wit would just say. So that had to have been like a real thing, and it turns out it was.
Well, Todd has no sense of wit either way.
Right.
You guys sound like giving too much credit now. So besides Luger Tatanka, we have Taker, Brett Owen, Diesel Razor. And Todd suggests that Razor could use some backup after what happened in that last match.
Oh, does that mean what I think it means? Bruce Hart?
Well, we can hope. I was thinking maybe one of his fellow NWO members, like Scott Norton, or I don't know, Stevie Ray. Now that's a backup right there.
Virgil.
Soul Train Jones, that's right.
Oh, get Soul Train in there. This is all building to who is it? This is gonna be 1-2-3 Kid, is it not?
It is not.
Oh, I stand corrected.
Somebody a little more famous. Perhaps a little more famous locally from where the show is going to be. But someone all in all who is not a bad choice. Given
CM Punk. Yes.
Yeah, good guess. Good. That's how the acrimony between he and Sean started.
Oh, yes, I knew it.
Punk confirmed for SummerSlam.
Kevin Nash was IC champion. I thought he was dead. LOL.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So then we come to what I'm going to term to be the best women's match in WWF history to this point. Now, having not seen every women's match in history to this point in the company, I'm taking a major risk here. I'm assuming upon 35 years of history that this is the best, and I'm probably not wrong. Bull Nakano versus Alundra Blayze in a non-title match. And you know Bull is being integrated immediately because she's got the Orient Express theme song.
They literally just went, oh, I'll give you the Orient Express theme. It's fine.
Are you Japanese? Can you vaguely play a Japanese character? Well, we're giving you the gong and the chimes. Ching, dang, ding, 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 ding. You know how it goes. It's a rite of passage at this point.
It really is. But
Takao Mori got it in the 96 Rumble. He's Japanese, just give it to him.
How do we feel about Randy Savage constantly calling her Bull Nakanakanakano? Am I a bit uncomfortable with that, or am I just being oversensitive?
It's a weird quirk. I don't know if it's really like offensive per se. I mean, I can't comment whether or not it's offensive, honestly. If someone's offended by it, that's their offense. To me, it's just inane. It's just silly.
I don't know. It had me thinking about the fact that that's like literally currently happening with Justin Roberts calling Michael Nakazawa to the ring. That was the only thought I had at that point.
Well, it's two very different people.
I would say the next segment is also like way more like on the level of offense from this show. I would say that the next segment kind of wiped anything else I would have had.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, yes.
We'll have plenty to say about that.
Oh, God.
Bull is seconded by Luna Vachon, who's wearing her best unfinished La Parka cosplay. I don't know how to describe this outfit she's wearing.
It's very much an outfit she's wearing. That's the best way I can describe it.
So she grab one aisle of a Halloween store and just throw it on?
I think she just ran through a Halloween store and things just fell off the shelves. I'm like, that'll do!
It's different. Mm-hmm. So the story here is that Blayze gets completely brutalized. She gets hair dragged all around the ring, and she gets thrown, swung around, just high velocity on her spins as Nakano just rips her apart. Nakano was a beast.
Absolutely. She was a unit. Did anybody else notice a wardrobe malfunction?
I don't look for those sorts of things.
No, I didn't look for it. I'm not a poor vort. But I'm sure on the second hair throw, you see the tights of Alundra Blayze rip. I couldn't tell. Like, I wasn't going to pause it and check because it's weird. But it did certainly look like Alundra Blayze, like, was thrown so hard it actually ripped her gear.
I got to say, I didn't really tend to notice.
Maybe it was just me then. Maybe it was just the color scheme and it looked like it had ripped.
That could be. It was a brutal throw. So Savage added a little levity to this beatdown. Bull puts Blayze in a simple chokehold. You know, when you're mad at someone, you just grab them by the throat. Well, you shouldn't do that, but if you were to choke someone, this is how you would do it. You just reach forth and just seize their neck with both hands. So Bull starts choking Blayze, and Savage goes, "What kind of hold do they call that in Japan?" They call it a chokehold. It's not some like exotic submission hold that you've never seen before. Like, of all the moves for Savage to get on and say, like, "Oh, what's this exotic thing?"
On the subject of on the commentary for this match, lads, do you know the interesting thing that Vince and Savage said that caught my ear?
Do tell.
It's a trick question. They said nothing of interest. They clearly had no idea about either of them, and it really, really annoyed me. Like, they were saying nothing for this whole thing. We had no background on like the life and times of Alundra Blayze. We had nothing on Bull Nakano, it just felt like they were just plopped in front of this match. And I thought, you always assume, like, Vince McMahon is there to tell these stories because he's the guy writing these stories. You'd always assume that he knows a little bit about the wrestlers he's hiring. But the more and more I watch him on commentary, I realize, actually, you don't.
He probably just sees him as filler.
More than likely.
And, I mean, it's a shame because you have two very talented women here. And they're having this rip-roaring match for 6 or 7 minutes. I mean, fans are going nuts for it, too, especially halfway through when Bull missed the flying senton leg drop and Blaze gets the backdraft German suplex for two. They were into this.
Really solid match. Will, what did you make of this one?
No, I enjoyed this match a lot more than I thought I was going to. And mainly it was just because, you know, I tend to forget about this time period in women's wrestling because when you think about the 90s in women's wrestling, I think the first thing that more so comes to mind is like the late 90s with Sable and Jacqueline and all that, where like there weren't actual matches happening. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I was almost like mentally ready to like tune out the wrestling, but I was like, no, I'm going to give this a chance. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought this was actually very good. I thought Alundra Blaze actually looked really good out there. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was actually a very good watch.
Ends up being a double count after Blaze dives onto the Kano on the floor. It was kind of a cheap finish, but as I noted, probably the best women's match in company history to this point, despite being 6 minutes and having a non-finish.
The best they've done so far. These two will meet again, won't they, very soon?
Still a very good watch for the show. We're 2 for 2 in the match department. Will we go 2 for 3? No, spoiler.
But we do get a little future echo that, like, the following bit they showed us was a handy reminder of, oh yeah, this is the good episode of Raw. This, don't worry, it's back to normal next week. Bam Bam Bigelow and IRS, they are a new team of friends. Doink the Clown and Tatanka. They're a team because of reasons. They'll fight next week. That's the Raw I know and love in 1994. Oh, beautiful. What a disaster that'll be.
I can't imagine Doink and Tatanka as a tag team in any capacity because they have, like, no traits in common whatsoever.
You know what? I reckon the people that enjoy or endure what you and I do on a week just, and this week, Mr. Washington, I reckon they will know what to do with this. So your challenge for next week is to come up with a name for the Doink and Tatanka tag team.
Ooh, this could be good.
Going down the challenge, at JRH Writing, at Tom Campbell on Twitter, and give us a name for the Doink Tatanka tag team. You have 7 days from now.
I'm sure some of our more perverse minds will come up with something very disturbing that'll make me laugh out loud.
Well, the more perverted, the better on this occasion.
Yeah, you can't be disturbing enough on this. So then we come to...
Talking of disturbing.
Arguably the best part of the show.
Depends who you're asking.
Yeah, I was going to say debatable, but...
Jerry Lawler says this is 5-star.
I will say the what I got the most entertainment out of, for sure.
I mean, I said arguably. I didn't say indisputably.
You know, the weird thing is, I'm like looking at the clock and wondering, like, is something wrong? Because didn't they say there's another match coming up? Maybe there's like something off on WWE Network. That was my thought as I'm like watching this tick by, and I'm like, there seems to only be like 10 minutes left in the show. What's going on?
Yes, we're watching. Like, something broken here.
Yeah, it makes sense literally in about 10 minutes. But as we get here, Jerry Lawler, please let us know what happened here.
Well, we have a special King's Court with Bob Backlund. Now, this should have been a really big deal because over the weekend we had a very random, very arbitrary, but yet very important heel turn. Because as Tommy and I mentioned on last week's show, Brett was going to face Bob Backlund, the Superstars, in a Clash of Generations for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Brett won a really good match narrowly with an inside cradle. Backlund thought he won initially, but it was actually a 2 count. And after the match, Backlund became very disillusioned with the fans cheering for Brett. And when Brett went to shake his hand, Backlund smacked him across the face, put him in the crossface chicken wing, and tried to injure him. After that, the referees pulled Backlund off. This is very uncharacteristic of Backlund, who's usually a a great sportsman and a respectable man. Beckham was on his hands and knees, staring at his hands, like in disbelief of what he had just done. That is the prelude for this King's Court, which should be a pretty big interview given, you know, the implications here. I mean, he just beat up the world champion without much provocation, other than losing a match and, you know, being a sore sport or whatever. We don't know why he did what he did, really. But first, we have more important business to get to. More important than a man turning heel that's about to challenge the world champion. Jerry Lawler comes out to... Well, first he goes into the crowd. He does get a funny joke about Savage's dates being inflatable, which Vince makes a great face at. Then Lawler finds his couple, the man of whom I think is Opie from Opie and Anthony. We're doing the old wedding proposal angle that Bobby Heenan did on Raw before. But this can't just be as simple as like a little 30-second bit. Oh, no, we're going to drag this out. The guy proposes. He doesn't get on one knee because he's lazy. Has no work rate at all for marriage proposals. We go to break for the drama before we get her answer. We come back from break. Lawler's in the ring with the girl. The man is still in the crowd. So she says yes. He gives her some advice. Meanwhile, Bob Backlund is just hanging out in the background. Like, here's a guy who just beat up the world champion. He's just chilling on the ring steps in a suit, just waiting for his turn to talk to Jerry Lawler while this all-important angle is taking place with guy whose name we've forgotten and girl whose name we've forgotten. Then Lawler tries to force a kiss on the girl. I'm thinking, is this wise given his recent history?
Oh, everything about this was cringe. going back to the fact that, like, one, why is this happening through a commercial break? Like, think about watching this live and 1994 and wanting to know, is she going to accept a proposal? Even though she, like, nodded as soon as he said, will you marry me? And the fact that Jerry Lawler, like, as he's introducing her, says, possibly future fiancé. So he also spoiled what was going to happen.
He ruined it, didn't he?
Like, he was like, he wants to ask you something. This is his girlfriend or possibly future fiancé. And I just thought, well, there goes that. And then, like, as he asks, she, like, nods. But he's like, let's pull her in the ring and let's really get the answer there. And so we're going to wait till after the commercial break. And I just thought, but we know. Like, we know this isn't going to go poorly unless this is, at least these are plants and you got an angle going here. But clearly you don't. And then, yeah, then he, like, grabs her and kisses her, and she looks so uncomfortable. And, of course, I just thought about all of Jerry Lawler's history, everything we know about Jerry Lawler at this point, including at this point, not even what we know now, but everything we knew at this point. And then he made a line that made me think about, like, everything we know about Jerry Lawler's marriages, where he said, if you guys ever reproduce, I want to have one of the pups. And I thought, you know, I know the joke he was trying to make there, mm-hmm. but knowing what we know now, it really sounded like he just wants their kid.
I didn't get that at all. I think it was just making like an ugly joke.
Oh, no, I was saying that was the joke he was trying to make. I got that. But I just felt like knowing kind of all the jokes we make about Jerry Lawler now, it suddenly just had a completely different connotation.
Yeah, I must admit, when I watched it, that crossed my mind as well.
It could have been a much more charming bit if they just kept it shorter and didn't drag it out, where Lawler had to fill time with more jokes, and especially while poor Bob Backlund is just waiting for his turn. And it's like, where the hell were their priorities at this point?
I feel like this was, you know, a lot of people criticize modern WWE for the way it's structured and the way, like, everything almost like feels, as my old buddy Matt Galloway constantly puts it, he'll say Monday Night Raw feels more like Monday Night Cooked, because it is, nothing about the show feels raw. It feels like it's everything is worked on a timer. However, this is one of those cases where I can see why that exists, because one, just how long things were running here, and you could really use that stagehand that's usually standing off screen yelling 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's this is Monday Night E. Coli.
Yeah.
This was bad. This derailed the. It's like the old joke about the guy who's eating the bowl of chili, and the guy next to him is eating he's sitting in front of a full bowl of chili and he can't imagine why the guy's not eating it. So he's eating his and it's really good. He gets down to the bottom of the bowl and there's a big turd in it. So he spits all the chili back out into the bowl and the guy goes, yeah, that's as far as I got. This is really good for a while, and then all of a sudden you get to the bottom of the bowl and there it is.
I was watching this episode of Raw in the living room at our place. So because obviously we're all self-isolated at the moment, and the Cultaholic office is in my house. And so I thought, I'll watch Raw in the living room. My good lady was playing The Sims on the laptop, so I thought, I'll put this on and I'll watch this. We get to the Jerry Lawler bit, and it's one of those occasions where, and they don't happen as often anymore because I'm a big boy now, but it's one of those occasions where, as a wrestling fan, you just want to curl up and die because you're trying to explain what's going on, and it's like there's no way to explain this. I found myself saying, I think this is a plant. This has to be a plant. Because otherwise, this is just a dirty old man sexually assaulting a woman on live television.
I mean, I'm sure they discussed beforehand what they were going to do. At least I hope that's what happened.
Oh, I hope so. Oh, I hope so.
How about we stop dignifying this garbage and just move on to how they botched the next part of this?
Yay! Because from this point on, wow, the show comes off the rails. This is where it's as if somebody, for the first time in a good 40 minutes, looked at a watch.
This is the part where the clown car flew off the cliff while on fire.
That's amazing. From here, Raw is just a hot mess, and I'm here for it.
So they're portraying Bob Backlund as having never lost a belt upon winning in 1978, since technically, you know, the towel throw-in, he shouldn't have lost the belt in 83. But then again, all the matches he's lost in the last 2 years, should he really become himself the undisputed champion? I mean, he's also like Doink on house shows and Razor at WrestleMania, so he kind of has no claim anymore.
He lost to Brett. Like, that's the one. Once you've had the return match,
yeah,
that's it. We're not still calling Bobby Lashley the uncrowned ECW champion. That's not a thing.
No, that's forever Ezekiel Jackson.
No, he is still the champion.
Well, like, technically, yeah.
Going on 10 years now.
Congratulations to Ezekiel Jackson, cracking the decade as ECW champion.
Yay, Big Rick.
This here is what you call domination.
So, back on who has very Donald Trump-like hair here, I should point out. I don't know where that mane came from, but it's definitely an interesting look. Mm. He talks about how he tried to boon our lives. I started to secretly mark out a little bit because this is the Backlund I love the most. We start using words that you don't use in everyday conversation. Talk about how we've changed, and he's disappointed in how weak we are because he benefited us financially. He tried to inspire us. He's going on, and then, to my consternation, Vincent Savage start talking over him.
Oh, man. Yeah, this was, again, one of those things that made me appreciate the modern structure overall of somebody being able to tell someone to hit their cue in the ring so that we can cut to whatever we need to. As Vince and Savage are just talking over and trying to cut to the clip they had. And it was so bad.
Yeah, I suspect at this point they knew they were over time, so they just had to push us along and they had to get the you know, the highlights in of the angle from over the weekend. But they were just, I think partially they were just in a bad spot and didn't know what to do because they were so effed on time. Whether it was the Shawn Razor match going over or the proposal thing going way too long, whatever the case may have been, they really screwed the pooch this week.
I think the proposal was the problem because, okay, the Shawn match went long, fine, but then you've still got time to repair it. Like the Bull Nakano Alundra Blaze match went short. Okay, that's brilliant because now you can repair it. But then you had like this six minutes. It must have been 5 or 6 minutes of this marriage proposal, this that just bloated out the last bit of the show. And if you just got rid of all of that and just had somebody go, right, Jerry, drop the marriage proposal bit. We ain't got time. They'd have got over it. The fiance would have got over not being sexually assaulted by Jerry Lawler. She'd have found a way in her heart to get over it, and the show would have run much better. But alas, it happened, and we just got Backlund talked over. It made me really sad.
Yeah, this is a wasted opportunity here, but they will make up for it. But I'll tell you, who really got screwed over was the Smoking Guns.
Before we get to them, can I drop in a little bit more from the Wrestling Observer? This is amazing,
sure.
Lads. Right. Okay. So we've seen tonight and over the weekend, like the embryonic stages of this new wild and crazy Bob Backlund, who's going to lose his mind. He's just going to become this old man that yells at cloud but uses big words to do it. And he's just going to be this out of touch leader of the new generation. It's going to be one of the most intriguing characters on WWF in sort of late 1994. Do you know what they had planned for it at one point?
I do, but let's see if Will knows.
I don't.
Right. Brace yourself, Will, from the Wrestling Observer. Bob Backlund worked Monday Night Raw as a heel and went berserk, looking at his hands after the match he had on the weekend like he was possessed. There is talk that Papa Shango is returning in the fall and will fit into this angle as the man casting a spell on Bob Backlund.
Nice! Oh, why didn't this happen? That sounds amazing!
Shango turning up and turning Backlund crazy.
That like makes perfect sense. And I mean, when I say perfect sense, I mean perfect sense in a very 1994 WWF sense. But yeah, I want this. Like, I still kind of want this. Like, I have to say, mainly because at this time period, I think part of why I preferred – all right, here's a little bit of confession time with William R. Washington here on Cultaholic. Are you ready?
Okay.
So part of the reason I was more into WCW than WWF was because of Papa Shango. Because, mind you, I was 7 at the time. Papa Shango, of course, first came in when I was 5.
He was coming when you were 4, but he missed his cue.
I was terrified of Papa Shango. He gave me nightmares. There is nobody in pro wrestling I was more scared of. When people talk about, oh yeah, The Undertaker used to scare me when I was a kid. No, Papa Shango terrified me. Are you kidding me? The feud with Warrior? I literally thought that he could just make people vomit. I literally thought that he could make you bleed motor oil from your head. Like, I believed in Papa Shango. And so...
Well, his matches with Warrior can make you vomit.
And so, like, the idea to 7-year-old me, I could absolutely buy into the idea that Bob Backlund would suddenly be possessed by Papa Shango.
Can I imagine Backlund as part of the Ho train?
John?
No, for the love of God.
John! Put Backlund in the Ho train, John.
John, the world's not ready for
John,
that.
Don't listen to him. He's got coronavirus. Don't listen to him.
don't be spreading lies to this man.
Don't spread coronavirus. John, put Backlund in the Ho train.
We have a duty to the public here to be informative and truthful.
Justin does not have COVID-19. You can give him a good old handshake if you see him.
No, don't do that. I don't want it from somebody else. So we come to the alleged main event, which has 2 minutes to pull this off. It's the Smoking Guns versus George Anderson and Tom Bennett. I look at the timer here. We have under 2 minutes to go. This is the 2-minute warning. And we have a commercial break as well. There's a lot going on here for this very inconsequential match. Guns hit the double teams. Billy hits a Ric Flair knee drop for some reason. Savage still going about the whole all the legal stuff. Shut up, Savage. And with 5 seconds to go, they managed to finish one of them with the Sidewinder as they're signing off.
Amazing. So bad. So badly put together. Like, I don't know whether Kevin Dunn popped out for a sandwich and came back. I don't know. But it all just went horribly wrong in the second half of the show.
I seriously thought that the show was just going to cut off. I'm like, is there something wrong here?
I mean, it did happen once with Undertaker and Skinner.
No, it was Undertaker and Demento, wasn't it?
No, Skinner.
Oh, okay. I seem to remember it was a match where like it went about 12 seconds and the other guy was on top of Undertaker and they said, oh, we'll find out what happened on this match next week. And we never did.
Yeah, they were trying to protect Taker. Skinner kicked his ass.
Yeah, that's the last thing that we saw. But there you go. That was Raw. What a hot mess. Big fan. good first bit. Went a bit weird near the
end. Oh, absolutely. I was excited because I was like, oh wow, he picked a great show for me to jump in on. And so I was excited to watch Razor and Sean, and then the show just kind of fell off the rails. And even the women's match was good. Like, I feel like those two things took up a good 2/3 of the show.
Oh yeah, it was. This was like watching the Godfather movies all in a row. Like the first 2/3 of it, brilliant. You get to the end, I think, why is Jerry Lawler trying to assassinate the Pope?
So next week on Raw, with three weeks to go till SummerSlam. Once we get to next week, we've got a Titanic tag team match. The team that, according to the Wrestling Observer, is going to start being set up as the New Money Inc. Bam Bam Bigelow and IRS.
Please put Bam Bam in DiBiase's tuxedo.
It's just dawned on me, lads. It's just dawned on me. It actually makes sense. Money Inc.
Because he's
got tattoos.
He's tatted. Ah, I get it.
I don't know if that's what they were going for, but.
Nah, I bet it wasn't.
Oh, that works. But
that was the purpose behind famous TNA tag team Ink Inc.
It was, wasn't it? They were a play on that.
Well, how about when Beer Money was temporarily split because Bobby Roode was injured? So I think Alex Shelley joined the team, and they became Gun Money. It's like, well, the money half of the team is injured, so shouldn't it be like beer and guns?
That's a great combination, and no one's ever got into any bother with that combination.
Oh, never.
So we got that. Money Inc. versus Doink and Tatanka. We need a name for them. At JRH Writing, at Tom Campbell on Twitter, suggest those for you. I'd like to thank our special guest, William R. Washington, for joining us for this episode.
Thank you for having me. I had so much fun.
Happy to have you on, Woods.
It's been amazing. Will you come back at some point and do this all again?
Anytime.
Get in.
Excellent.
We'd like to now give you the floor to shout about everything that is RBR Wrestling. This is your time. Go for it. Tell us where we can find you, Twitters, all that stuff, the Patreon. Go for it, sir.
All right. Well, I have been hosting RBR Weekly Wrestling Talk for 15 years this year. We launched June 18th, 2005, so we've got a lot of content. If you go on over to RBR Weekly Wrestling or RBRWrestling.com, it has the most available content of any wrestling podcast on the internet. It is absolutely true. RBRWrestling.com has every episode we've ever published all the way going back to June 18th, 2005, all the way to today. I swear to you, we have 757 episodes there, plus a lot of side content. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/RBRWrestling. I'm on Twitter. I'm William RBR. I also have a YouTube channel. It's Wrestling with Will. I just started a new series called Wrestling with My Friends, in which I discuss some of my favorite professional wrestling matches with people who have never watched pro wrestling. It is one of my favorite things I've ever done. And right now we have our first episode up where we review Cody versus Dustin from Double or Nothing with one of my best friends, Carolina. And then with another friend of mine, we're reviewing I recorded the episode. I just have to finish editing it, but it's Brock versus Cena versus Seth Rollins from the 2015 Royal Rumble. I've got a bunch more coming up, so please check that out. That's Wrestling with Will on YouTube. But yeah, RBRWrestling.com.
Yes, friends. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
JRH Writing on Twitter. What are you doing this weekend? What are you writing? What's happening on the website? What are you doing? Doing a thing? You doing a writing or not?
Yeah, just some WrestleMania related matters. Stuff to keep busy with because it's Mania season, although it's obviously the dullest Mania season I can remember for obvious
Yeah, nothing's
reasons.
Happening of any note, is there? It's just been so quiet.
I mean, it's in terms of getting excited for WrestleMania, it's kind of hard to. But understandable, of course.
Will, actually, I must ask you your thoughts on WrestleMania this year, because I'm living for it this year. It's just it's a beautiful train wreck.
Oh man, I was really big on the idea of this show shouldn't happen, and then they announced how it's happening, and I thought, all right, maybe. But like with all the news that's come out today, I'm back on the why is this happening? And it's already been taped, right? Like so, like I see a lot of speculation about, like, what they can do because, you know, the show has obviously lost Roman Reigns and, you know, it's like, what's going to happen? And I'm like, I don't know. It shouldn't be happening. That's the bottom line to me. I feel like if it does happen, this is, like, the perfect stopping point of, hey, we should, like, pick up wrestling in a few months.
We should all take some time away to have a little think about what we've done. He's at Jerry's Writing. I'm at Tom Campbell. He's at William RBR. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. We will see you next time. I love you. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.